Welcome to Cape Cast Audio 20. You're listening to the 20-minute podcast, the weekly podcast from the city of Cape Coral, Florida. I'm Connie Barron. I'm the Public Information Director for the city, and I am the host of this weekly program. My guest today is Victoria Bateman. Victoria is our Financial Services Director. Welcome to the program, Victoria.
Well, thank you, Connie.
We're going to be talking about pensions and health insurance benefits for retirees. Before we get into that, why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself? What brought you down to Cape Coral?
Well, I'm a senior executive retired from the federal government, where I worked for different presidential administrations. As a career senior executive, I was assigned to a cabinet secretary. My recent stint was with the U.S. Department of Education. Before that, I was a CFO at HUD, Chief Financial Officer for Federal Student Aid at Education, and Rural Development CFO before that.
So you've had a pretty vast career in the federal government level.
Yes, where we dealt with billions and billions of dollars annually.
What brought you down here?
Quality of life. This was the place to be. I lived in Merlin. We have a boat and jet ski. Couldn't afford to live on the water there. The weather wasn't good enough, so here, quality of life is the reason we're here, to raise my kids here.
Well, let's talk about pension benefits. It seems to be a rather hot topic, and based on your presentation a couple of weeks ago at the city council meeting, you've now become a YouTube sensation.
Yep.
That you didn't realize.
Facebook, yeah.
Facebook, that's right. Explain to the listeners out there what types of pension benefits the city of Cape Coral offers to its employees.
Well, there's a cutoff date of 2003. Where the benefits change. But basically, if you have a certain number of years with the city and you become vested after 10 years, it depends on your length of service, you'll receive some form of your or percentage of your salary, your last 5 years of salary on average. You have the police and fire pensions, where a lot of that is regulated by the state because they do contribute to those pensions. And then we have the general pension here as a third type of pension.
And the general pension, that's for the non-public safety employees.
Correct. That would be your white-collar, blue-collar, professional people.
By far the largest pension, probably, because there are more employees than general employees, probably, when you look at public works and parks.
Yeah, I think it is. It's also the one we would contribute more towards because the state doesn't contribute towards that pension.
Now, there was the discussion a couple of weeks ago at the city council meeting about pension benefits, and then about the retiree health insurance benefit. What triggered the discussion at that council meeting between you and it was also the city's financial advisory committee chairperson who was doing some presentation?
Well, the month before in January, Don McKiernan and the FAC had presented some information about the state of Rhode Island's pensions. We discussed those in January. He came back again in February and ran through some numbers. As it turns out, the numbers he presented in January for Rhode Island and comparing to the city of Cape Coral were incorrect. So that Monday again at the FAC, the next meeting in February, we went through the numbers. He went through his presentation. And basically, his presentation sounded like doom and gloom when the city of Cape Coral was falling apart. I took exception to that. And then we had to repeat it was for 4 hours that morning. Where we talked about this is not a doom and gloom city. We are not going broke. When you talk about the OPEB, you scare people. You talk about $176 million, $191 million that's payable. So we had the same discussion that night at City Council and the frustration that I showed in both meetings. One was for 4 hours earlier that day, and then that night again for an hour and a half for the third time in a week. So I was very frustrated because the city has done a lot here to improve its financial condition. It's improved its credit rating because of how we're controlling our expenses and the financial decisions that we're making. And for someone to come in and compare the state of Rhode Island, who only funded its pensions 50 to 60%, versus the city of Cape Coral that does our 100 annual cost contribution, the citizens out there would think that we're not handling our finances the way we should. The presentation that the FAC gave also talked about employees who scheme, steal, and cheat the system. That's not happening here in Cape Coral. The system is what it is. It needs to have some improvements, needs to make some changes. The FAC made the people here think, well, you're going to have to come up one day with $191 million all of a sudden. and it's not true. So I'm very frustrated at the financial information that's twisted. The condition of the city's finances is falsely put out there, and doom and gloom. This city is a little bit better off financially than it was last year and the year before that. We were able to improve our credit rating, save $90 million over a 30-year period on our bonds by renegotiating our interest rates. We're getting ready to lease, well, we're buying 40 police cars under a lease buy option and a fire truck. And it looks like that interest rate will probably be 1.87 up to 1.94, somewhere in there. So that tells you the city's doing very well with its finances, especially compared to a lot of our sister communities who are going bankrupt. But we're not like Harrisburg that went bankrupt. We're not like Rhode Island.
How is it that some of these numbers get put out there? I mean, where are these numbers coming from? And why do you think that some of the, like the Financial Advisory Committee chairman, why do you think that he is comparing numbers that aren't accurate?
The Don McKiernan was really, as a chairman, he was trying to make a point that pensions and OPEB need to be addressed. Well, okay, make that point. But with the FAC, and I'm not referring to the chairman as a collective body, you find a member or so of the FAC that likes to go to our CAFR and pick out different numbers that have no correlation and say, see, you're robbing the city. You're hiding the money. Page 167 has this number. Page 133 has that number. Well, one refers to fire. The other refers to general. They're not supposed to correlate. At the FAC in February, that same member came forward and wanted to talk about an error in the 2009 CAFR, where the auditor issued a statement incorrectly that the city's financial condition was deteriorating. Not true. So when it was pointed out, the auditor general weighed in and said, that's true. The condition is not deteriorating. Take it out of the report. So the report was issued without those sentences. Last Sunday night, I get an email from that member saying that's not true. I don't see it in the report, so it can't be. I'm like, it's not in the report because it was taken out of the report. The same FAC went to our audit committee, the chair of the audit committee this past week, and asked for proof of this, that, and the other thing. The frustration is how many hours do I need to spend to chase down incorrect numbers when it's always you have the incorrect numbers, not me? So it's very frustrating to my staff to be criticized by the FAC for not being able to explain the budget, not be able to explain these discrepancies. They don't exist.
Well, government accounting, I did take some of those classes when I was in college, and governmental accounting is not a simple accounting process. And the CAFR that you're talking about, the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report that we put out, it's close to, you know, almost 300 pages, you know, 250-300 pages. And there are a lot of different financial sheets and reports in that particular report. So it's very, to me, it can be very complicated.
It is complicated. And at the federal level, it's no different. My budgeted education annually was over $82 billion. We managed a loan portfolio of students of $480 billion. And we would issue a similar report as a CAFR. Not one member of Congress usually read that report. Very few people ever read that report. What most people like to see and what the citizens here should focus on as well as the council is our budget report to actual. This was our budget for the year. This is what we are spending against that budget. This is how we're faring against the budget. The CAFR should be used more for a very technical, if you're really into accounting, you want to look at your accrued liabilities, your accrual unfunded things, that's contained in the CAFR. But I have found very few people who understand, unless you're a government employee that has that kind of background, the CAFR is not going to make sense to you. I can tell you right now, the FAC keeps insisting that we incorrectly issue our CAFR because we include what's called intra-fund transfers. The general fund, you're allowed to use for many purposes. The water and sewer fund, you're restricted in how you can use the revenue. It has to be used for that purpose, for water and sewer. But if water and sewer has to reimburse the general fund for accounting and payroll and stuff, then you have to transfer that money. Well, legally, we have to show the transfer. The FAC keeps saying we're doubling up. No, we're not. We have government accounting standards that have to be followed. But what you need to understand is what is the use of that report? Well, the CAFR is used by our credit rating agencies. They're used by your federal government, your state government, to do consistent reporting amongst all public entities. I don't know of any citizen, really, that would be interested in the CAFR. You'd be more interested in this is how much revenue, this is how much we received in ad valorem taxes, this is how much we received from water rates, from Sunsplash, and how did we turn around and spend that money? Right. And how much did we keep in reserves?
Right. When we're looking at, and the discussion started out about the pensions at the council meeting, we're not the only city or even any government agency that seems to be addressing pensions. Why do you think that the public pensions have become so controversial these days?
I think because the private industry has moved from its model of pensions to where they put more of the onus of a pension and retirement on the employees. Your private industry, what they have stock options. They get annual nice bonuses, sometimes 6 months, a year's worth of salary is a bonus. They get a lot of benefits that a public employee is not entitled to by law. So what does a public employee get? The security of retirement. And that's the main difference between the two. There was a time when the public sector and the private sector got both pensions. Well, private industry couldn't afford that and the stock options and stuff. So they did away with pensions, but they increased their other funds that they give to you before retirement and after retirement. The public employee is not entitled to those. All the public employee gets is a pension.
How are our pensions funded and managed?
Well, we have an actuary that we work with all three pension funds, you know, the general, fire, and police. There's a trustee board that's required by law who has an investment advisor. They meet every quarter to go through their investments, see how they're doing, are they meeting the benchmarks, are we funding what we need to fund? The law says you have to fund the annual normal cost. This city does that. Not all of our sister cities right now are doing that. Some are not putting that money in there. Once that money's in there, then these pension funds, like I said, they meet quarterly. We review all the investments and how it's performing. What's happened in the last few years is the pension costs have increased as a percent of salaries. Why? One is salaries are decreasing. As salaries decrease, the percents that you fund of salary, well, then your percent of pension payment would go up. It doesn't mean the dollar went up, just the percent. On the other hand, there's been huge stock losses, investment losses the last 3 years.
2008 was an awful year.
Yes. And instead of gaining 8%, I believe some of the pension funds lost between 13 and 14%, up to 20%. So what happens is you have to take that unfunded loss and fund it over a 5, 8, 10-year period. So that will increase temporarily. You're making up that shortfall. Now, what will happen is you'll have days or years that you'll do more than 8%. So the city's contribution and rate percent will go down in those years.
How are our pensions doing overall and from a funding mechanism?
The pensions have been pretty much meeting the benchmarks. And, you know, even the city has certain benchmarks with our investments that we do. Now, the city's investments were, I think we did pretty close to 2% last year, which is pretty good. The pension funds over the last 10 years have been averaging about 8.42% over that 10-year period. So they've been meeting the goals. The other thing some people don't understand about pensions when they hear, you need to have an 8% return on investment. Well, there's about 47 assumptions when you do an actuarial plan for a pension. One of the things that's in the assumptions is that all employees will get a 6% annual increase. Well, we haven't been. The employees here haven't. So we're using assumption that we're going to get all these increases. So if we were to lower that assumption, we would pay less in pensions. All right. You have to be very careful when you change the assumptions, you do them all. You look at them all as a whole. You don't just change because of 2 or 3 years. So we have, when we did the pension negotiations, the union negotiations, we got agreement to reopen pensions and your post-employment benefits, and your ad pays, everything that affects your pension and your post-employment benefits. So we took care of the short term with the negotiations, and they've all agreed to look at the long term. And the easiest way to address that is with new hires. You just don't have the same benefits that current employees may have. That's how you address your increasing cost. It also means when an employee gets hired, like when I was hired here, I knew I wasn't getting post-employment benefits because it wasn't offered, all right? But it's a lot better to bring in people and get quality people here when they know up front what they're not going to have and what they are going to have. And one of the things that we hear as we negotiate our pension changes, we have to be very careful that we're not driving our fire and police across the river to Lee County or to the sheriff's office. Because what will happen is you lose your quality people.
And our pensions, even though they say, oh, well, they're like 65% funded or 62% funded, some people say, well, they should be 100% funded, but that's not necessarily realistic.
I don't think you'll find anybody. I'd be surprised if you find somebody that's 100% invested. For the credit rating agencies and others to consider you to be healthy, you should be around 70 to 80% funded.
Now, when we're talking about the post-employment benefits, also known as OPEB, mm-hmm. we're mainly talking about the health insurance for premium for the retirees. We've got just a couple of minutes left here. Let's talk about what the city offers and how the city has addressed that particular liability. That's the one that people will throw out the number and say, oh, my gosh, you need to be funding $175 million.
Well, the OPEB, basically, that includes all active employees. Not all active employees are going to retire. What the OPEB means is that, and this the city addressed the major cost of the OPEB with its new retirement benefits plans. It eliminated full medical care once you retire to where you just receive $150 subsidy or up to $150 subsidy. The OPEB itself is like a mortgage. When I buy a $300,000 house and I pay 4% interest, I'm going to owe $625,000 on that house 30 years from now. So what the city does is it pays 100% of its bill per year, 100% of the annual amount due. And now over the next 30 or 40 years, we'll be paying $191 million. That's where that number comes from.
And as you said, we did change that. I think it was in October of 2001 when council changed the – actually passed the ordinance. And then in it became effective October 1st on 2003.
Right.
And what that did was it meant anyone hired – after October 1st, 2003, would no longer be eligible for the full subsidy. What about, I think the city also requires all of its retirees to make Medicare its primary
Correct.
Insurance rather than the city's.
Correct.
How does that benefit the city?
A lot less costly to the city. That grossly, if you look at the OPEB numbers, not because of hires after 2003, it's very little because of those hired after 2003, because it is limited to the subsidy. It's mainly for the retirees before 2003. That $191 million may someday not be as high because not as many people who are projected to retire who work today will be retiring.
When you take a look overall at the city's financial condition, taking into consideration the pension obligations, the retiree health insurance obligations, how do you think the city is doing? I know that overall they say that the cost for benefits, especially with pensions, is about 3% in other governments. How's Cape Coral doing?
We're no different than other cities that way. You will see pension reform going on around the country at the state level, at the federal level. The city of Cape Coral needs to do the same thing. We need to address future pension costs and our future OPEB costs because we don't want to sustain this level of the cost to the city or to any municipality, any government. The city, the employees here recognize that. The union presidents have recognized that. And we're all kind of working after April when we can renegotiate. We do need to address that.
I know that the unions and the other the non-bargaining employees have all been very supportive, and I think we've done a good job working together, like you said.
Yes.
Well, Victoria, we're probably going to be having you back here a few times when we talk about budgets and other financial topics. I want to thank you for coming and spending a few minutes with us to talk about pensions and other post-employment benefits.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
All right, we'll see you next time on Cape Cast.